All this sucks.
I've done whole podcasts.
Yeah.
And then been like, went to hit the record, like stop recording. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Awesome.
Yeah. Smooth. Real smooth. So what's new with you?
Oh, just living the dream. Marketing.
Yeah. You're up at PG, aren't you?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I used to, I lived west of there, Prince Rupert, for 25 years.
Oh, nice.
You ever been out that way?
Tons.
Oh, yeah. Nice for work or pleasure or
a all mix of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess kind of your line of work. It's always,
it's always photographed a salmon, few salmon trips out there, like go through there for hide and fly, shit like that.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. I spent a lot of time out there. We used to get weathered in. I used to fish there in like the Heck Straits.
Yeah.
We used to get weathered in there all the time. Interesting.
Right on.
Spend a week in like Charlotte or Masset or Sandspit.
Bright lights.
Yeah. It was cool though. You got to do we did a lot of hunting out there. So hunting blacktails and shit. So
yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah. Cool, man. Cool. So what's going on up to the northeast of you there? Ugly stuff up there, right?
I assume you're talking some backdoor deals.
yeah. Shady.
Not in the least surprised, but it's a complete shit show.
Yeah. It's funny because I actually noticed, I seen your post and that's what brought it to my attention. And I started looking. Then I watched and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one. Like, more you dig into it in the province, like there's deals like that in the works, central BC, Kelowna, like northwest, northeast. It's just a matter of time before we get rocked.
Yeah, it's funny how they just slip it under the rug.
Yeah, totally.
I guess it always comes out when the regs come out, but then everyone's just like, what the?
Yeah, it's reactionary rather than proactive and then trying to do anything.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck trying to get it back once it's gone, like the freaking grizzly hunt.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'd be mind blown if it happens, but I could see it happening. Like, but to be able to shut down that much area to fishing, hunting, camping, whatever, like, that's just insane to me.
Yeah, and that's just the thing. It's not just hunting and fishing. It's going to be shut down, like, for everyone. Yeah,
recreational use.
Yeah. So, like, all those people who like to recreate up there and, like, even, like, the residents in that region, like camping, totally. whatever the hell you like to do, it's gone.
Yeah.
Just crazy. Scary.
Yeah. Time will tell.
Hopefully it doesn't go through. Hopefully enough. Now it's funny. Cause like, you know, the province, they're trying to sweep it under the rug with nobody noticing. And then like you threw it up on Facebook and then like, it kind of just spread like wildfire, right? Like, and then all of a sudden everybody gets wind of it. That's one positive thing about social media is, you know, when you want it to, you can use it in your favor too.
It's your best friend and your worst enemy all at once.
Yeah, no doubt. So hopefully enough guys made us think about it.
Yeah.
Cool. So how do you pronounce your last name?
Trehearne.
Trehearne. Okay. I didn't want to try and fuck it up.
Oh, doesn't matter. Everyone does.
Is that right? Well, I won't know. It won't be one of the statistics.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. You're a photographer. Were you, are you a hunter turned photographer or photographer turned hunter?
I've been hunting since grade school. So I did hunting. Then I was an electrician by trade before this. And now I've been a photographer in the hunting industry for, I guess this is my 11th year now.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
So a Sparky. So were you like a Sparky right out of high school?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Jumped on a drilling rig for a very short amount of time, and then they kind of turned that into becoming a trade. Like, screw this, like I'm never going to school. And then like a week later I was enrolled in a trade. I'm like, well, shit. Guess I'm going to school and being an electrician.
Yeah. So is it like the same old story, you know, your dad hunted, you hunted?
No, I'm from a non or on the anti-hunting side of it family.
Oh, really?
I am the only person that hunts, or I guess one person fishes now, but yeah. Definitely not your stereotypical story.
Right. Where did you grow up?
Lethbridge, Southern Alberta.
Oh, Albertan.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Out on the prairies.
Cool. So you spent your time chasing big bucks.
Yeah. Like my first experience, like I didn't even shoot a squirrel before. My first experience bow hunting a couple of guys took me out that I met through the archery store, and I shot a velvet mule buck, like my first hour of hunting in my life. So nice. I was kind of hooked after that.
Yeah, that's one thing I yet to get is a velvet muley.
Yeah.
Tough with our seasons. We got the, like, I don't know, man. Like, the way my brother lives in Red Deer.
Yeah.
So obviously he hunts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm quite up to speed on how their seasons are in Alberta. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm definitely a fan of how they run things out there as opposed to how we do it here.
100%, which is why I go back there. Like, I think I've hunted mule deer once in the 9 years I've been in BC. It's just not worth it. But I try to go back to Alberta almost every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been put in for points out there. Brother's a rifle hunter turned archer just when he moved out there because he had no other choice, right? If
you're not. Yeah, it's worth it. You get two extra months.
Yeah, for sure. So, but yeah, I haven't been out there yet to hunt mule deer, whitetail, but not muley. So
right on.
Maybe this year, but.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Cool, man. So, how did you get into photography then?
I was in the oil patch still doing the electrical thing and just hating life. So it was a 24/4 shift I was working. So 4 days off, I bought a little camera package just for something to do on my days off. And then it was only a handful of days back in the next shift. I just said, screw it. Like, I'm going to try being a photographer. Walked in like as a foreman, quit my job, gave back the truck, dove head first into it.
Oh yeah. Nice. And one of those guys.
Yeah.
Dive right in. So did you quit? Yeah. You quit your job right away?
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, 8 days after I bought my camera, I quit being an electrical foreman, turned everything in and was all in on this.
Ballsy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of an all or nothing mentality with most things.
Has its advantages, I guess.
Yeah. That first year definitely sucked. Like, the savings took a huge hit, but the remaining decade has been awesome.
Yeah, no doubt. It's typically, I mean, if you put the hard work into it, it's like anything, right? It's, it's going to be worth it in the end.
So. Yeah. I totally lucked out though. Like, in my current line of work, you can try all you want, but if you just don't have the eye for it, you can try all you want, you're not going to get it. So there's a lot of just fluke that I had an eye for it, so to speak.
Yeah. That's the category I fall into. I'm horrible at taking pictures. Horrible. Yeah, I have a camera. Like, I can turn the thing on. That's about it.
Yeah,
so, totally. Like, I struggle with the camera on my phone. Even like taking pictures for like Instagram and shit. That's why I never put pictures on there. I'm just horrible at it. Even like when I get into like hunting and like even after the animal's down, I'm just so hyper focused on what I'm doing. And the last thing I'm thinking about is taking a picture. You know what I mean? It takes.
I totally get it. Like, when I'm hunting for myself, other than a quick selfie with an iPhone, I don't take any. Like, it's time for the task at hand, not dicking around with photos.
Yeah. Do you get to do a lot of hunting without camera?
I have pretty good success, but very little days of field.
Oh, yeah.
I maybe get 7-10 days in an entire year between like spring, fall, winter, whatever. But like, usually get half a dozen-ish animals per year in those 10 days. So usually pretty effective when I do go out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good numbers. That's a lot better than my numbers.
I'm
the other end, about 100 days, six or seven of those animals.
I have a bit different mentality than a lot of guys that hunt. Like, a lot of people hate on it, but like, I straight up go to kill. I will not leave my doorstep on a hunt if I don't think I can shoot an animal every single day. Or if I'm going to an area where it's likely going to take 14 days to find something, I don't go. Like,
oh yeah.
So I have a very different way of looking at it, just because like my busiest time is hunting season. So I can't devote that time to myself.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I'm the same way where, you know, I have full intentions of, and like, I only want to go if I'm going to kill anything. That's why I have a hard time hunting with friends and stuff, or like doing like any backpack trips or stuff. Cause I'm just
my time. I want to be the guy.
Yeah. It's time away from, it's time away from work. It's time away from my kids. So I'm selfish that way. And I wouldn't be the one to shoot, but I mean, obviously if I'm going, my kid just turned 10, so that'll probably
priorities are about to change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm more stoked for him hunting than I've been for myself in a long time. So it's going to be pretty neat. Photography in the beginning, how'd you make a business of it? Where did it come from? How did it get from where you quit your job? You picked up a camera, quit your job, And now you're a very successful photographer that has clients all over the world.
Basically at the start, like it was all kind of a product of my love for hunting. Like I wanted to be around wildlife more. So the first 4 years I shot nothing but wildlife images. So basically just year round, like I went from Alaska to Mexico several times and everywhere in between, just shooting any and all wildlife I could find, building up like a stock base to start selling, learning how to use a camera because I really did suck at the start. Like it was horrendous and quite embarrassing to look back at what I was submitting.
But you probably always had an eye for it. I don't think like, can you learn that? Like learn the eye, or are you just, is it just one of those things where.
I think it's just developing it. Like,
oh, is that right?
Because I didn't know I had it. It was just a practice, then going back and looking at your stuff. And it's like, oh, that would have looked way better if I shot it this way, kind of work at it that way. But yeah, so wildlife was it. And at about that 1 year mark, give or take a month or two, I posted, I think it was an elk photo on Facebook. And I had a magazine editor reach out that I followed saying, hey, like, that's a cool shot. You should submit to us. So I just sent them a whole shit ton of photos and yeah, got a few photos published in a big like North American magazine right off the go. And it's just been uphill since.
Yeah, that was it, eh?
Yeah, it's kind of a very small industry. Wildlife's just a waste of time now because it's so diluted, everyone with a camera. But
yeah, there seems to be a lot of it.
Yeah, like it's straight up why I quit doing wildlife and went to hunting was just too many idiots giving photos away for next to nothing just so they could see their name in print or get Instagram likes.
And I imagine there's quite the difference of taking hunting or taking pictures for like social media, which I imagine there must be guys that take pictures just to get, you know, likes and follows and shit like that.
Oh,
and actually take it exactly. For a purpose.
Yeah, entirely.
So you've been doing this for how long, you said?
I've been in business for 11 years.
11 years now. Cool. So what's who's your longest standing client?
All of them. I don't have any new clients. It's all repeat. I would probably say Kafaru is probably one of the longer ones at the moment for manufacturers. As for magazines, like there's lots that have been 10-year clients now in the editorial world. So, yeah.
Kafaru, that's big name in the industry. A lot of folks recognize that. Any other big name clients in the hunting space?
Well, I work with Mendel, Leopold, Kafaru, Bergera, First Light, like lots of them.
All the big boys.
Like little companies don't have budgets to hire photographers and send them around the world, right?
How does that work? Like, do they approach you with say they have a specific project and they say, hey, we need some pictures for this, and you will go and take pictures? Or do you just are you just always taking pictures and then you just send them to certain, like to your clients you think that could use them?
No, I don't do it. That's called like a spec, spec. As there's no guaranteed income that way. I don't do that. Yeah. I'm a business. I don't pick up my camera if it's not to make money. So it's never just take pictures and hope I can pay my mortgage and retire one day.
Right.
Everything's on an assignment basis.
It's with purpose.
Yeah. So it goes back and forth. Like same thing. They're all long-standing relationships. There's not a single company I just listed that I haven't worked with for years. So it's, if I think something's cool, I'll pitch it to them. If they have stuff, they'll throw it at me back and forth. But I do like four, I guess, buddy hunts a year that pretty much, because it's the only time I can hang out and hunt with my friends. Same thing. Everything's too busy. So it's still work, but those are the four trips I line up. The rest of the year is just straight companies come to me and send me places.
Oh, okay. I got you. So like say Kafaru or First Light, they figure that, you know, they need some photos for this. So they'll call you up and say, hey buddy, we got to send you here. And
yeah, are you available? I got this on the go.
Oh shit. That's pretty cool.
So yeah, like I have 2022 entirely booked with that already in like a third of 2023. And like this year it's four countries, three provinces and nine states or something like that. So it's pretty busy travel schedule.
Yeah. Canada, US. Where else
I'm going to Spain and Belize this year as well.
Oh shit. That's a good gig.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, give some advice to an inspiring photographer who's listening to you talk and say, hey man, that sounds pretty easy. I want to do that.
Don't do it. Honestly, the amount of guys that were around when I started versus now, like it's a handful at best. Like the amount of work it takes, you straight up can't have a family. You can pretty much guarantee a divorce. like you're on the road 300 days a year, 250 or whatever, like the sacrifices are greater than what it looks like on a surface level. Yeah, so if you want to be a photographer, like I do, but I'm weird. Like I've always been on the road, like I said, doing 24 and four shifts in the oil patch. Like it's all I've known since I was 16. Yeah, I would recommend be a photographer, be a hunter, and separate those two things and separate those two as well from life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
No, just because like same thing. Do you want to go from 4, 5, 6 cool trips, like a spring bear and a haida gwai and a sheep and a deer for yourself to at best 6 days in an entire 365 day stretch? I don't know.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think it's very romanticized in the hunting circles.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of romanticized shit in the hunting space lately.
Like when you look at how many 16 or 18 hour days, like working through the night, skipping meals to do it, like it's just, yeah, it's a lot different than how it looks.
Yeah, no, I bet it is. Like I said, I mean, I hunt, like, again, back to that conversation we had, the time I do get to hunt, I like to spend it for myself. But yeah, which is kind of surprising you even get that much time to take off hunting if you
it's just because I make it too, because it's still ultimately why I got into this was my passion for hunting. I think if I can hunt and fish a little bit myself, I would straight up get a different job. But
yeah, and that's one thing too with hunting and fishing. I mean, I've always, we've always hunted and fished since, as far back as I can remember. And now, just with work and stuff like that, if I don't get out, I go fucking loony, man.
Yeah, I totally get it. I guess the luxury is I set my schedule. No one else does. Like if I want 7 months off, I do it. I just obviously wouldn't make nearly as much that year.
Yeah. So I mean,
and it's also because I'm greedy that I only have that many days.
Yeah. But I mean, you're coming from a business perspective, right? And one thing about being an entrepreneur is that it necessarily doesn't have those, those retirement benefits. And you got to work hard while you're young and while you can, and put money away for when you get a little older and you can't do it. So
yeah, well, that's a big one too, like talking about aspiring people wanting to get into this. That single-handedly is the most overlooked thing with all the guys I've talked to over the last decade is retirement. Like I've maybe met two professionals in the space that are actually saving so they can retire one day. And it's like mind-blowing where I look at it like this job's extremely hard on the body, breaking back, always carrying way more gear than every single person on the trip. Like my body's probably going to shut down by 50 realistically.
Yeah.
So like I have to look at it as, okay, no pension, no retirement, whatever, but I have to save enough to retire 15 years earlier than most people.
Yeah, well, exactly. You don't want to be going back to the oil fields when you're 50. And
no, and my body realistically won't let me.
Yeah.
Just seeing how much it's my knees, my back, everything's deteriorated now in my late 30s.
It comes quick, man. And it's funny.
Totally.
When you're 20 and you're doing shit, I mean, the worst you're going to feel is sore for a day or two. And then you get to 30, it slows you down. And then once you get pushing 40 and hit 40, you're like, Jesus.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. I should have listened to those old timers telling me to take it a little bit easier.
Oh yeah, it's funny. Everyone's got to go through guys too. Like, right. Like I carry 130 pounds, I'll be fine.
You had I liked your comment there you had on, it was Instagram. You went and seen your doctor there.
Yeah. Yeah, like that in itself shows the strains of this job. Like I compressed a vertebrae without even knowing it in the last 2 years. So, awesome. That's just my steady level of hurting that I didn't even notice breaking my back.
Yeah, and you're a tall guy too, eh?
Yeah, 6'2".
6'2", yeah. So, I mean, and that's one thing. The bigger guys, you definitely feel it more on your knees. And obviously, I'm riddled with injuries myself, but par for the course, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. All fun and games.
Yeah. If you could go back, I'm not saying I'd change it, but
or do the same, it'd
be different.
I advise people away from this, but I wouldn't give it up for anything. So, it's kind of a little bit hypocritical, but.
Yeah, but again, I mean, it's like you said, you're kind of a dive all in type of person, and maybe that's what it takes. And especially with today's generation, we just look at things a lot differently than we did.
Yeah. Well, and like same thing, I'm not like ragging on anyone, but like the need for success and affirmation now, and like instant gratification, just That's not a thing. Like, it takes so much work to get to the point where you could make it doing this, that you're going to get shit on for years before you ever get to that.
Like you said, I mean, even probably like the use of cell phones, the cameras and cell phones now have changed. Like, honestly, like, how much was your very first camera you bought? Probably wasn't cheap.
That kit was cheap, but I upgraded it very quickly and very heavily. Like, I was in that first year way back when, I think I sunk, I don't even remember, like 40 or 50 grand into camera gear.
Yeah, that's a lot. But I mean, like, you know, compared to like what you can get for picture quality in, you know, just a camera, it's amazing, like, just how far things have come and in the little time. And but I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, like myself, I can go out and spend $100,000 and I'll still take shitty pictures.
That's just it. The gear doesn't equate skill.
Your hunting trips with your buddies and that. Do you take your camera gear out?
Those four trips a year with buddies are all still 100% work trips. Like, I work with brands on them. I go to my buddy like, hey, this is a work trip. Like, it has to be this exact hunt because it's already pitched to a brand, etc. It's like, they walk on, I give them backpacks, all clothes to wear, weapons, optics, everything, because looks matter in marketing material.
Right.
And like, I don't, like, very few of my images are used by companies for social media.
Yeah.
Just due to the price of them, they don't really want to waste them. They're used for the marketing stuff. So all those buddy trips and stuff is shooting typically, like, this year I'm shooting the gear that's getting released in 2023.
So you're getting, you're getting next year's gear, you're getting that, and you're getting,
The photos are what they use to release the gear to the public with that.
That's part of their
shot marketing. Show at Hunt Expo.
Cool. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Your buddies get, they get to wear some new gear and you get to go on a trip and hang out.
And always get to be the first shooter. And there's definitely some perks.
Yeah. No doubt. So do you go out with just like you and another guy?
Never more than two. Yeah, it gets to be a little crowded.
You got a couple buddies that you do this once a year with, or?
Or
do you switch it up?
My best friends are usually always on the roster kind of thing. But every once in a while, usually one of the four trips a year, I'll pull in like some random dude that I met along the line. Like, having come from Alberta, like, goat was always my pinnacle. Like, it's the hardest tag to get in Alberta. There's like five of them in the whole province. So, like, I see that as the coolest shit ever. So I'll go to an Albertan or a Saskatchewan guy and be like, hey, do you want this hunt for the price of a tag? The catch is I get to photograph you. It's like super easy to find guys because you're getting the equivalent of a $20,000-$30,000 outfitted hunt for nothing, right?
Yeah. And I mean, goats are a good one too, because I mean, like, what, half the population or more than half the population of goats in the world are in BC or something like that.
Yeah. It's like 70 or 80%.
Is it that high? Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I'm going on a goat hunt next week up north, but I just caught COVID. So I'm getting over that. That's why I'm a little bit congested.
Yeah.
But it's funny because, like, I see a lot of guys are kind of on to that, that late goat hunt now. So
yeah, it got trendy. Like, it's kind of a debatable topic again, but a couple people in the industry covered it and name dropped locations in BC where they were going. And then it was ran with by like Sitka and whoever. That literally was the year. It's because I go every year too. And that was the year. The year after that was when it got busy, when it started trending, when it was the cool kids thing to do. Like, I hadn't seen a hunter in February for 7 years or whatever it was until that exact event, and then it was just busy ever since.
It wasn't there was guys doing it. A lot of locals did it. My stepdad, he taught up there in Stewart, quite familiar with that area there, and I lived in Prince Rupert, so it wasn't that far away. So we did it a few times, and I've done it since I lived down here and stuff. So I never heard of anybody else going on a trip. Obviously there's a guide outfitter up there, but
Like Milligan and whoever's up there, there's guys doing it.
Yeah, but not like it is now.
Yeah, it's a trendy thing now, like where you might see one party in an outfit or whatever post something or talk about it. You're now seeing seven podcasts and 20 crews going in February.
Yeah, and it's funny because you can do that hunt, the exact same hunt at the beginning of August, and it's a hell of a lot easier. It is and it is. I mean, it's not crazy hard hunt by any means. I mean, if you're lucky, if you're going to see a goat, they're going to be pushed down a bit. And a lot of times you could even get them coming down for a drink, but
totally. Like, I've been in on I don't even know how many goat hunts now, But the thing people, like you said, don't, I think, realize is how much goat hunting opportunity there is from August to February in BC. Like, it's not just one zone.
Yeah.
Like Rupert, yeah, Karras, Smithers, like it's everywhere.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And they're all like North Coast and British Columbia has booked goat like everywhere. Like I remember.
Oh, yeah. Like 3-4 year old goat is Boone and Crockett.
Yeah. I remember going from up the Granville Channel and looking on the hillside. Jesus, man, you'd lose count of how many goats are up there. And they're all huge. Huge.
Yeah. But I think that's just a product of it being so like social media trending right now. It's not because guys really want to do this and have dug into it and like applied for one of these million one-to-one zones.
Yeah. Or less than one-to-one.
Or less than what?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's because it's so trendy. That's why everyone's congregating to the one zone, because it may have not been their thing that they actually really wanted to do. They're just doing it because everyone's doing it.
That's
kind of my take, because like you said, there's so many good zones. Like, why wouldn't you just capitalize on one of the others?
And exactly. In Region 6, you can, August 1st, Region 6 is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. Like, and there's goats everywhere, everywhere.
Totally. Like, I've probably done 20 hunts in Region 6 in different places. And yeah, they're all insanely awesome.
Every year, do you do the same thing? Or is it kind of like every year, okay, like last year I hunted sheep, this year I want to hunt caribou?
100%. I'm not a sheep guy, so I've haven't even hunted sheep since moving to BC. I've shot three bighorns in my life in Alberta, but it's just way too much cool shit in BC for that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I got a sheep this year. I had that region 317 draw LEH, and I got it.
Nice.
This year. But I'm just not a sheep guy, man. Like to be like, when I first moved to Kelowna here from Prince Rupert, I was like, we never had mule deer up there, right? Just blacktails, right? So I moved down here, and then all of a sudden, you start seeing a lot of mule deer, and I just instantly got hooked on mule deer. And I remember coming across this garage sale, and I found this book, and it was by Kurt Dardner. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but probably one of the best, like the best mule deer hunter around, right? So, and he just kind of got me hooked on mule deer. So it's always been about mule deer, and I've done pretty good, you know, coming from a place where you never hunt a mule deer. I mean, obviously the first few years were pretty rough trying to figure those critters out, but I mean, I've done pretty good. I've gotten a mule deer every year, and two of them 200. So the thing about mule deer is that it takes a lot of work. Like you can't just go mule deer hunting. You know what I mean? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to spend 3 days going mule deer hunt. Doesn't work like that. You gotta be scouting.
Yeah.
Totally. Constantly. And they're just, they're a tough critter, but I mean, that's why I love them. But so I'm kind of into that. And the sheep for me aren't. Yeah. I mean, I love sheep, love looking at them. I'm just not really a sheep guy.
Yeah. Same. Like a lot of guys, I guess, didn't believe me at the start, but now I've hunted with more and more of them. Like I have left, like had legal sheep in the spotter and saw a goat the other direction, and I go for the goat every time.
Yeah. I'm way more fascinated. Really... Yeah. I'm the same way, man. I'm way more fascinated with goats than I am sheep for some reason.
But I guess back to your initial question, I usually try to switch up hunts, draws. Like I apply all over the US, Alberta, Saskatchewan, BC, everywhere. So that obviously changes what I'm hunting. But I guess Alberta is probably the single constant from year to year to year in Alberta hunt, whether it's whitetail or mule deer.
Yeah. Yeah. So you obviously got family out there. None of them hunt, but can you still go?
I go with my buddies.
Yeah. They just host you. Yeah. Cool. And that's one cool thing about the States is I don't think a lot of people know is that like as a Canadian resident, you still can put in for applications down there in some management units, and there's a lot of OTC tags.
40 different states.
It's crazy. And then like in Canada, I mean, well, I know like Saskatchewan, you can do what?
Whitetail and bear. Ontario, you can do whitetails without a guide or a host. Like there's a few, just nothing like the States.
Yeah, nothing like the States for sure.
Yeah.
Just kind of neat. You figure out an area that has less land and 10 times as many people, there'd be it'd be the opposite. It wouldn't be enough, but
I think that's why kind of everyone down there idolizes what we have up here. Cause if we did that, the hunting quality would go through the floor in Western Canada with how busy it was.
if we just let
everyone in.
Yeah. I mean, we have enough problems as it is up here.
What we got.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the problems we have hunting is such a small result of the loss of our wildlife and all that. It makes it, when I just funny, cause I talk to Americans and I tell them that and they're like, huh, what?
Yeah, no, totally.
How can that be? You guys got, they're like, how much public land do you have in British Columbia? And I'm like,
yeah, pretty much all of it.
There's more public land in British Columbia than there is land in Texas. So
I'll
put that to scale.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and they're kind
but of I think the problem is like, well, everyone knows the problem. They just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, wildlife and land sustainability and health is just not on the radar.
Yeah, and it's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, and it's funny because like I talk to my dad about this stuff all the time, and you know, he's a baby boomer, right? So everything was kind of just like, you know how the baby boomer generation was, right? It was just like they kind of had everything, and like they didn't really have to like, you know, there was no repercussions for shit they were doing at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and now it's kind of like, well, and they're like my dad's like, oh, I remember when you used to be doing this. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, maybe if you guys would have did this, we'd exactly. still be able to have some of that. Yeah. He's like, nah. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. Fuck, why are you arguing with me? That's how it is.
Yeah, totally. Like you hear it with the salmon and stuff all the time. It's like, yes, there's bigger things affecting the salmon, but still, if you didn't just mass murder them in the early 1900s,
yeah.
they couldn't have herded anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like I remember going moose hunting up, like we go to Houston and go moose hunting with those guys. And like by day three, there was like moose down. Like, I mean, it's not due to hunting, but it's just due to like road access and everything else. Right. Industry, yeah. all that shit. Yeah. Right. But at the time totally when all that stuff was going, yeah. At the time when that stuff was going on, if they would have stepped in and said, hey, and I'm not saying there wasn't people that were doing it, but I mean, I don't think enough of them, but
yeah.
You know, again, like we talked about earlier, everything is a little easier to access now. I mean, I had no idea about that shit going up in up northeastern BC until I seen it on your post, right? So let's talk a bit about, because I'm kind of interested in like your hunts. So when you're going on your hunts for, say, like not for yourself, with your buddies, you guys are doing what, like a backpack hunt, say what, like 5 to 7 day backpack hunt?
Yeah.
So are you big on weight? Like, are you a weight fanatic when it comes to your pack? Cause I imagine like what is all your camera gear weigh just alone? Just your camera gear, sit around 30 pounds.
Yeah. More than that. So like my,
you get hung up on weight stuff? A lot. Yeah. Like just
yes, all the like, other I would have had the lightest pack out of anyone you've ever met if it wasn't for my camera gear. Cause I've refined it so much.
Okay. That was, yeah. My thing was, is that by design? Like, do you,
well, it's just, I don't want to carry more shit than I have to. And I have to carry the camera stuff and the 20 batteries and this and that, and all the lenses. And so, yeah, like every single other piece of my kit is the lightest shit you will find anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Like the gear itself is light. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's one nice
thing. Like I could easily, if hunting by myself, go on like a 10 day hunt, well under 50 pounds with a weapon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. I don't get on into weight too much. I mean,
yeah.
If I'm not big on either on bringing shit that I don't need. So like, yeah. There's a lot of things that guys will bring and be like, oh, I bring this because, you know, this, but then I'll go like,
yeah, I get it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
there's a few comforts I bring for sure. Like I bring a Helinox chair on most backpacking trips. It's like, a lot of people think it's retarded packing a chair up the mountain, but it is an extra pound in your pack.
Yeah. But those things, I mean, yeah, they do add up. But again, if you're comfortable, especially glassing, I mean, I don't use one myself, but I bring a pad, right? I bring a pad to sit down on. You know, I have used those in the past.
That's just it. The more things that bring you comfort, either mentally with like the odd shitty snack or whatever, that'll just keep you happier, hunting harder. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So what about your food? Do you the type of guy, do you have all your meals planned out, pre-planned out, or you just throw all your shit in a bag and say, okay, well, I'm going
to munch on this? I go to the grocery store like 2 days before my trip and just go up in the aisles. I don't count calories. I don't do whatever. Like I've just done so many. I know what I want, need. I really don't need much food compared to most guys. Like I've calculated it on a few trips, like week, 10 day trips. And I've been between like 1500 and 2000 calories.
Yeah.
Like where that would absolutely crush a lot of guys. But it's just like, I do fine with very little.
Yeah. I'm the same way, you know, and I kind of find it amazing that some guys are like, oh, I got to bring this or this, and I need 3,450 calories each day to function properly. Yeah. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, like I just bring, if I'm hungry, I'll eat. And normally when you're just, I mean, obviously you get hungry, but
yeah,
you can go a long time sometimes just like by accident, you'll go the whole day and, you know, you're not hungry. So if you're not hungry, what the hell's the point of eating? Right. So, I mean,
I think too, in the backcountry, a lot of guys confuse thirst with hunger. Like you start to feel it, like you're not even putting back a liter a day.
Yeah.
That's the bigger issue. I find hunger.
Yeah. I find that too. And I've gone with a couple guys that are underhydrated. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, getting some water or stuff, they're sitting there, you know, sucking on eating and sucking on those energy squeeze tubes and stuff like that, just trying to get saying, oh, I'm, you know, depleted, I gotta bring up my caloric intake. And you're like, well, you just have some water, dude.
Yeah, totally. But I guess everyone figures it out. You do enough of them, you refine it every single trip. And if you come home with 5 extra pounds of food, it's like, well, I'm definitely not taking that next time.
And exactly. And if, you know, if you're a little hungry on the for the last half a day, you're packing shit out, then you know you did good.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, for sure. So what about like your camp setup? Do you you run a big tent, small tent? Do you guys all, like when you go with your buddies, you hunker into one tent, or
run some golden rule is I will never share a tent.
No way.
It just sucks too bad. Like if you get rained out for days or blizzard or whatever, like two guys stuck in that small a space for that long of time is just hell to me.
Yeah.
I pack an excessively large tent for a single person. Like it's a Hilleberg Anyen or Anjen, however you say it, 2GT. So it's got the massive vestibule. You could likely sleep 3 dudes in it if you wanted to. And I use it just for myself.
Right.
I ended up going that route purely for like in the vestibule. It's big enough, same thing on weather days, to throw my Helinox up and just sit and cook and do everything in there.
Right.
And not have to get your sleeping bag wet and lay out all my batteries and camera shit at night. So that's definitely on the heavier side of things I take.
Yeah. Myself, I like a bigger tent. So if there's two of us, I prefer sleeping. I'm the opposite. I prefer sleeping with somebody, like sleeping in the same tent, just because I'm a very light sleeper. Mm-hmm. And I find if there's a guy in another tent and they're rustling around, moving around, if they're,
it
drives me fucking nuts. Drives me nuts. I'm always like, okay, roll over, go back to sleep, right? And then roll over again. Like but I'm a super light sleeper, not just myself, you know, but I've gone with buddies who they prefer to sleep with themselves. And I mean, it's not that bad, but the extra room is nice when you don't have to share.
Yeah. I could care less if the trip is blue sky and no weather, like other than a guy might smell a little funky by the end of a long backpacking trip. Like there's usually no issues, but I just always anticipate, pack, plan for the absolute shittiest trip.
Yeah. What's the one thing that you just can't do without on like a backpack, huh? Besides your camera gear?
Probably an ice axe hiking pole. I wouldn't leave one of those behind for nothing, like a Whippet or the mountain stick or something similar to that.
Yeah. Hiking poles are a must. And it's funny. I was like my cousin tried to get me to use pipe poles for years. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, those are for pussies and old men. Eh? Like, no, I'm not using that. I'm not using it. And then sure enough, I don't remember how I first started using, but it was his, and I used one of his, and I was like, oh my God. Like games, like just instantly.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Especially like on the downhill part, just like my knees.
Yeah. That's the only time I actually use it.
Yeah. Uphill is not too bad. Just downhill though. Like,
and I only pack the one, never two, just because same thing. I always have a camera running.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just for my knees on the way out. But that ice axe thing that a lot of guys don't take unless it's like a late season hunt, like we were talking about, is insanely handy. Like, end up using it for everything. So I would never just take a singular normal hiking pole. It'd be the ice axe one or nothing.
What about like a spotter and stuff? Do you pack all that stuff with you too, or you just run your camera gear? Because I imagine
I'm working, camera I'm not hunting. I'm not helping glass. I'm not spottering. I'm not binocularing. I'm photographing, because if I'm hunting, like doing the acts of the hunt, I'm not getting the photos.
Yeah, it's taken away.
One or the other.
No.
Which is why, like, I would never photograph a hunt I was hunting on. Like, you just cannot do both.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That's, like I said, that's my biggest problem. Is I never taking time to stop and take a picture. I'm always just too hyper focused on what I'm doing. And
and you'll find that too. Like, there is photographers that do both, but the spectrum of the photos they get, like, you'll see lots of kill stuff, you'll see lots of camp stuff, and like that's usually where it's like concentrated, just because you can tell when they're bored and, oh, I guess I'll take some photos now, versus the moments when like you would be hunting is what they had the least amount of content on.
Yeah. You see, I'm kind of like, I'm not a really a grip and grin person. Like I don't like taking pictures of anything I shoot, and I very rarely post any of that stuff. I just, you know, to me, it's just for me and it's not for anybody else. But that's the thing that I find most intriguing is like those neat little camera angles or pictures where, you know, you'd like, I don't even know how you do them. Like, you have them on your Instagram page, and I'm assuming a lot of your photos are the same way, because it must just be like your unique style. And like, you know, you just put a camera down and take a picture, and you know, it shows like maybe a hunter blurred off in the background, but it shows something else that's in focus and stuff like that. To me, those are the neatest pictures.
Yeah, that's the ones you don't think of.
Yeah, would you say like, so is that by design, or you just take so many pictures that, you know, it just happens?
Like a lot of guys will set out to photograph, like have objectives and write them down and like have a photo list they want to accomplish in a trip. So they're happy if they get whatever, I need those types of shots, I need cam shots, I need over the shoulder hunting shots. Whereas I shoot to get those every single minute of every single day. So I'm trying to look at every single scene and crush the entire list at each scene rather than as a whole of the trip. So yeah, just kind of countless amounts of all of them from all.
So how many pictures are you taking a day, say, on one of these hunts?
1 to 2,000.
So that camera's just, it's going nonstop.
Yeah, obviously kill days are a little heavier. That'd be closer to the 2,000.
Wow.
1,000 would be like you're boring, not really much changing, like you're not moving around much, so kind of the same scene. But
that's crazy. That's a lot of pictures. So do you have to go, like when you get back to, say you're on for 10 days, you come back, now you got, I don't know, 15,000 pictures.
Yeah.
How do you go through all those? How do you process all that? Like one by one on a screen, or?
So I have a big like 40-inch monitor.
Oh yeah.
So I could see all the imperfections, but I will go through, just because the schedule usually is so busy that time of year. And I will like just quickly burn through them all. Like it'll take a couple hours, but just flag kind of the ones that really stand out, catch my eye. And like the clients don't get everything from a trip, obviously.
Yeah.
So say I need 20 or whatever for whatever company, I will go through and grab enough to make each client happy and move on to the next project, like till I have downtime to go back and actually go through everything. And
so do you have to edit any of these pictures, or do you
do any edited?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I do all the editing. Yeah. So yeah, like
so when they get it, they could just print it, put it in the magazine or whatever they're using it for.
Yeah, like it's good to go. Like I have all color calibrated monitors, so they don't have to screw with them. Like just stuff like that. But yeah, on any given hunt, I would say it's a pretty big range. But I will finish, edit, have ready to go 150 to 300 photos.
Wow, it's a lot.
Regardless of the duration, that's usually about what I need to keep everyone happy. Like it doesn't matter if I have one client on the trip or three, because lots of times they'll all get in on one trip to save money. But
so I imagine the advancements in photography gears definitely helped, because like everything now just is on an SD card, whereas before it used to have to be like you imagine
compared to film. SD is absolute garbage and I would never use one. There's things that are light years ahead of that now.
But, oh, is there? Okay,
we'll see. Yeah, that's about five what cards I know. Back.
Oh. Okay, there you go.
But yeah, they just have too high of a failure rate. Like it's not uncommon at all to lose everything on an SD card.
So what's it now?
Like trail cam guys, XQD and CF Express are the top two. The cameras are built for them. Like they're not even the same shape, look, whatever as SD.
Gotcha.
If you're buying cameras with SD cards, you're kind of in like there's three tiers of camera, like a consumer, amateur level, a prosumer, which is like a midline, and then pro bodies. Mm-hmm. Usually the pro bodies are your several $1,000 camera bodies, and those are the ones that have these new, higher, faster, better cards. So your average person will never see it, because your average person won't drop $8,000 or $5,000 on a camera body.
Yeah, definitely. So how many pictures will fit on, I guess it all depends on the size of the photo, but roughly how many fit on each one of these cards?
I don't max them out. Like you can fit, same thing, depends on the size. Like you can get 256 gig card and fit thousands and thousands and thousands of photos. Yeah. But I usually switch them out because I'm always running two cameras at once too. So both of those cards each day, I will take out and put in my waterproof card case and grab two new cards each day. And that's purely because, like, if I get washed away in a creek, I don't want to lose everything from the trip because I shot the entire trip on two cards.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When both cameras go down. Yeah. Whereas I could still salvage it because it's in a waterproof hard case.
Right.
What I shoot each day up until then if something goes south.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like you got her dialed in.
Yeah. A lot of mistakes were learned.
Yeah. That's the best way to learn, though. You got to learn the hard way.
Yeah, totally.
Most effective. So you got any plans for the spring for just yourself? You do you hunt spring bear?
No, I'm booked solid this year. So
do you hunt spring bear though? Try
to? Yeah. Every year, this will be the first year I actually don't shoot both spring bears.
Cool.
I've probably shot 50, 60 bears in my life.
Yeah, it's a fair bit. Yeah. It's nice in BC. Right now, anyway, we're allowed to shoot two, which is good.
Yeah, hopefully allowed that doesn't change. I always bounce back. Like, I've hunted Saskatchewan, Idaho, Montana for bears, Alberta. And like even in Alberta, because I lived there up until my mid-20s kind of thing, but they have a thing where on private land for predation purposes, you can shoot bears year-round without a tag if you have a written letter from the landowner.
Oh, really?
So like in July or June or whatever, when the seasons were closed, we'd rip out, find a cattle ranch that has black bears on it in like the foothills, and you just get to hunt ground. So yeah, I did a lot of bear hunting that way.
That's neat.
Yeah.
I love that. Bow hunt bears, or you rifle hunt them?
I probably both. 30 of those have been with my bow.
Oh yeah,
35.
Yeah. Cool. So do you
The last couple of years, I pretty much tried to bow hunt most things, but kind of took a hiatus this last bit.
Yeah, this year I just hunted strictly with my bow. It was different. I mean, I've shot a bow long enough where it, you know, I can shoot 80 yards no problem, but it's just a different.
I guess hunt. I kind of hit my objectives too with the bow. Like I've got some really big deer, antelope, sick of blacktails, bears, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, the only maybe thing
if I got a really cool tag, I'll try to bow hunt it or go up to the bow zone or something for a sheep. But
cool, that'd be cool.
There's just benefit here, like Alberta. Like if we had the two extra months, then yeah, I'd bow hunt like crazy again. But
yeah, that's one of the kind of frustrating things. I mean, obviously, like in Region 8, you're allowed to rifle hunt during the elk rut, which drives me bonkers. But it's just like being out in the woods with your bow because you want to bow hunt, and then. Yeah. There's still rifle hunting opportunity. It's like, it's hard to make the full commitment to act. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're like, well, I'll bring my bow, but I'll bring my gun just in case. And then
you always rifle hunt.
You always end up back to your rifle because you're like, well, fuck, man. Like you hear gunshots a couple kilometers away and you're like, oh, for fuck's sakes. Like, fuck it.
It's defeating.
I'm sick of being out here. I'm just going to, but this year I just said, no, I got to just keep the gun at home. Strictly for my bow, and
it's pretty much the only way to do it.
Yeah, I was looking for a nice fall bear this year. I got one in the spring, but I wanted to get one in the fall, and I couldn't get one. Just couldn't close the deal. For the rifle, it would have been no problem, but not with the bow, I couldn't get within 100 yards.
Yeah,
so cool, awesome. Man. Okay, so where can everybody find and follow you and all that jazz?
Pretty much everything is my name, my website, my Instagram, my Facebook, just Nick Treherne. Last name is Treherne, since no one will be able to spell it otherwise.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be able to say it, but I'll throw it up in the show
notes. Totally. But yeah, website, all social medias are just my name.
Cool, dude. Where are you off to next?
Let me just look at the calendar. Some fishing work down south and then Spain after that.
Oh, yeah. So with all the government just easing the restrictions with the border, you must be loving that, eh?
Like contrary to a lot of what the media has said, like I've traveled out of country this entire time COVID's been happening. It's been a pain in the ass, but we've been able to do it.
Yeah. So it hasn't been impossible. Yeah. It's hard to follow the freaking news. You never know. Like you never know what's actual news and what they're just wanting people to see or read. So it drives me nuts.
But with our government, I'm not banking on any consistency moving forward. So take it as it comes.
Yeah, we got, I don't know which way you swing in BC, but like from my point of view, we got like the worst of both worlds, provincial and federal.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
Cool, dude. Okay, buddy. It's good talking to you. Awesome. Good to meet you.
Yeah, likewise.
Okay, man. I'll talk to you later. Thanks, eh?
See ya.
Okay, I want to thank thank everyone again for tuning in to another episode of the Folks Hunting Podcast, which is coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoors Collective. This episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. Backroads Maps, never get lost with Backroads Maps. And AKU Boots, you owe it to your feet. Quick shout out to Howl for Wildlife. If you guys are not familiar with Howl for Wildlife, make sure you head on over to howlforwildlife.org. Become a member, doesn't cost you anything. They got tons of great stuff going on, and we're going to be working with them getting some Canadian issues put on their platform. Thanks again, everybody.